Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Today, we're kicking things off with our friends from Ableist, a nonprofit serving more than 700 disabled individuals and their families in Fairfield County. We're going to learn more about an internationally renowned program Ableist is now offering called Sib Shops that combines recreation, discussion, and information for siblings who endure the good and sometimes uncomfortable parts of having a sibling with a disability. Then we're going to meet Sacred Heart University's Vice President for Advancement and their new Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer to talk about how this institution is opening a new chapter aimed at broadening opportunities for both students and staff. And we'll invite you to support SHU's Jackie Robinson Scholarship Foundation with a chance to hang out virtually and celebrate the 20th anniversary of the famed Subway series with none other than Joe Torre and Bobby Valentine and special guests. Then we're going to wrap up talking about the positive effects of exercise on your brain with Dr. Wendy Suzuki, who's poised to host a Zoom workshop on the subject later this week for Newtown's Maplewood Senior Living Community. We'll be right back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. AARP Connecticut is expanding on the National AARP Community Challenge Grant with a third year of its local Livable Communities Grant Program dedicated to funding quick action projects in Connecticut communities. The grant program is part of AARP's Livable Communities Initiative that aims to help neighborhoods, towns, and cities become a great place for people of all ages. The AARP Connecticut Livable Communities Grant Program is open to incorporated organizations that are 501c3 or 501c4 nonprofits and Connecticut government entities who seek to make improvements in their neighborhood or community in Connecticut. Comprehensive details about the program and applications can be found at aarp.org/CT, but act fast. The application deadline is 5 p.m. on October 21st. Again, just visit aarp.org/CT. Well, we are returning this week with some friends of ours from Ableist, a 501c3 nonprofit supporting more than 700 individuals with special needs and their families from birth throughout their lives. They've been a leader in serving the special needs community in Fairfield County in towns including Darien, Greenwich, New Canaan, Norwalk, Ridgefield, Stamford, Westport, Weston, and Wilton. And they've got a longstanding reputation for individualized, high-quality care. We're pleased to be chatting with their CEO today, Amy Montemuro, and Maddie Schulte, who is a Sib Shop facilitator. And that's the main event that we're going to be talking about today, this affiliation between Ableist and Sib Shops. And we're going to talk about all that after we kind of catch up with Amy a little bit, find out how she's doing now, just a little over a couple of years into her leadership position. Amy, how you been? How's things going over there at Ableist through this COVID era that we're still kind of teetering on the edge of?
We've been doing very well. We have the most dedicated workforce that has been able to keep people safe, get our families back together, keep people engaged by using, you know, remote platforms that have been available to us. We reopened our day supports July 15th to get individuals back to their as much normal routine as we possibly can. But throughout COVID, our staff have been working in over 40 different locations, 24 hours a day, really keeping people safe and engaged and really dealing with what the rest of us are during this very difficult time.
Great. Well, if I recall correctly, we got to meet you a little while after you got elevated to the CEO and president position, but you've been with Ableist for almost a quarter century now.
Yes, 24 years. Yes.
So,
and it's Yes.
As I was going to say, since you took over the lead role there, I know you set out a few goals that you hope to attain, and obviously, COVID-19 kind of put the clamp down on a lot of things. But since you became CEO, what are a couple of the key things that you have been able to accomplish that have either enhanced or even brought in new concepts and programming there?
Sure. So we have actually been very hard at work. We developed a relationship early on when I took the position with Greenwich Hospital. We have a full program over there called Project Search, where interns are on a rotation participating in different aspects and job responsibilities over at the hospital. Mm-hmm. And after their 9-month program, our team works with them to transition those skills that they've developed over to jobs in our community. So although COVID has definitely put a damper on that process, we're still working with the interns that completed their first rotation this year. And we have 6 new students from our community and our school system that are benefiting from this new program in the community. And the relationship with Greenwich Hospital has really been incredible. They've been outstanding partners, and for the organization, it's been just, an eye-opening experience that we really have to have more community partners like this to help individuals to develop these skills in our community.
With medical jobs and opportunities growing faster than we can find people to fill the positions, it's great to know that that they are working with you to try to kind of bridge that gap. So one of the other ways that you guys have been very innovative, and as we mentioned a little bit earlier, is through this launching of SIB shops. And let me kind of give you a moment to take a breath, Amy, and switch over to Maddie. Maddie, first, give us a kind of an overview of what SIB shops is all about.
So SIB shops are really workshops for individuals who are siblings of someone who has special needs. They're really recreation-based events. They're supposed to be fun, high-spirited, relaxed events for the siblings to come together, enjoy one another, meet one another, maybe make a friend through it all, and talk about some of the struggles and successes or better parts of having a sibling with special needs.
So this is not something that organically grew into ABLIS. This is an international initiative. Amy, back to you, because you put the stamp of approval on it to bring this in. Tell me a little bit about the backstory and how you came across SIB shops and how you go about the mechanics of affiliating and bringing this into an agency like ABLIS.
You know, it's interesting. I was contacted in the early 2019, last year, by the school system talking about the fact that ABLIS had SIB shops years before, and then due to funding and lack of resources that they discontinued, and the schools kind of, you know, they reached out. They wanted to see what we can do to help them because they saw a lot of siblings in the district here struggling, that they didn't have anybody to talk to. Nobody really understood their struggles, what their home life was, how they were feeling, whether good, bad, or, you know, indifferent, and just what to do with all those feelings. So we started looking into how we could do this. Maddie's been with us. She started as an intern. She's incredible at advocacy and groups and social groups and getting individuals together and learning. And so she was the perfect fit to help me get this off the ground. She participated in a training so that she can be the facilitator. And we have a young woman from the schools. Her name is MK, and she is a sibling, and she really wanted to be a part of the development of this program so that she can help other siblings in our community share their experiences and really figure out ways that they can support each other. So
I was going to ask, so in your tenure there, 20 plus years, Do you recall back when this was an ableist program, in its first inception?
I was not that at the time. I was solely really overseeing our residential and day supports. It was under our therapeutic services. And so I do remember that we had it. I do remember there was participants. And I do remember that there was during a funding difficulties that the program had stopped. They didn't have enough staffing resources to continue it. And we do know, especially during COVID, where now, parents are home and a lot of individuals for whatever, could be compromised medical situations that they have, their children are home with them. So parents are really focusing now on their child learning, right? Homeschooling and the Zoom sessions offered. And that is their focus of their child with a disability. So we know now more than ever, the siblings really could use a support group and peers to talk to about how they're feeling and how they could support each other.
Yeah, I have to imagine that since the initial SIB Shops initiative and then the space in between, that this program has continued to improve and bring in resources. I see here in my notes that this is not just a program and a curriculum available to agencies like yours in the United States and Canada, but it is of great success in Japan, New Zealand, Argentina, Iceland, the UK, Turkey, Italy. It must be fantastic to have the international scope of experience informing the development of this program in real time. And Amy, you can certainly speak to it, but Maddie as well.
It wasn't formalized, I believe, but the evidence shows since 1962 and all over the world, there's been a need for siblings to have support, to help with their guilt, embarrassment, isolation, resentment, and pressure to be, to achieve. So we're just, we know that it's needed. We know that it works and that it's helpful. And Maddie had her first session yesterday, and it was really fantastic.
Great. Well, Maddie, what were your numbers like, and how did SIB Shops session kind of 02-1 go?
It went really well. We had six individuals. We played a lot of games. We did icebreakers, and we got to know one another for our first time meeting everyone. And this morning, I spoke with one of the individuals' moms, and she said afterward, he told her, "Mom, I found my people. I'm really excited to meet other siblings who go through the same thing as me." He's younger, so he might have thought, there wasn't a lot of people out there who struggle with the same things that he does. So it was really meaningful to hear that we're, there for the right reasons, and it's really helping people.
Great. And the sessions have started, but there is still room to add people and catch them up. Let us know a little bit more about what people can expect when they call you, and who are the ideal candidates that you're looking to attract to fill these open slots?
So really, the ideal candidate is someone who is ages 10 to 14 years of age, give or take. We don't want to deny anyone for, maybe a year or two of an age difference. Mm-hmm. But somebody who has a sibling with a special need and they're able to relate to the group in that way, I think would be the ideal candidate. But if they reach out, we'll try and catch them up beforehand, before the next session, and go from there. But we really want to, continue to keep this open so other people can be involved throughout the next few months.
And of course, now it's virtual, but if we finally get to the eventuality where we have vaccines and we're coming out of, winter 2021 and moving to a place where the restrictions are not so intense, do you envision SIB Shops going on to be something that would even be more of a face-to-face experience?
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely the goal post any COVID concerns.
Excellent. Well, let's talk a little bit more about what potential candidates can expect when they call you. And I know they can go to ableis.us, that's ABILIS.us, /calendar to link to the registration, or they can email Maddie, which is Schulte, S-C-H-U-L-T-E, at ableist.us. So parents and loved ones who are hearing this program or hearing about it, what would they expect to need to do? Is there any documentation? Is there any cost, or do they need to bring insurance cards? What's the startup procedure?
So they would go to the ableist website, and even if they emailed me, I could send them the consent form and a registration form, and the cost is $40 either through cash or by card. We do not need any insurance cards. If the individual is a part of the Greenwich Public School System, their fee is waived. So they can expect to only pay cash, or, you know, select the cash option, so they don't have to pay for that.
Okay. And what type of a premium is there for those who do not have school system underwriting? Because this is not exclusive to folks in the Greenwich system.
Right. There is. No, it's not. And it's open to the community. And if there's any financial need, they can just contact us and we can have that discussion.
Okay, very good. Well, in the last couple minutes that we have, what else is on the horizon for ableists going into the fall winter season and as we approach 2021, Amy?
Well, definitely our most important is we are celebrating our 15th anniversary of our walk run event. So we would love community members to go on our website and either donate to the organization or join a team. It's a virtual format, but we are trying to make it as fun as possible, where community members are videotaping and sending it to us so we can post them. And usually we meet at Todd's Point, and it's, you know, 1,000 family and friends throughout our community being together. So we want to make sure we still have that same feel. And certainly during these uncertain times, we definitely need our community support. We are getting ready to, we've partnered with Second Congregational and Church, and there is a new 501c3 developed called Coffee for Good. So that is another training platform that will be located at the Meat House. Mm-hmm. On the church's property, that will be a coffee shop for individuals to really continue to develop some work employment skills that will lead to community employment. And the best thing is that our community will hopefully come and get a cup of coffee and join in the process of helping people develop skills.
Fantastic. Well, we really appreciate you two coming in and having a chat with us this morning, and hopefully that will be of some assistance in filling up the remaining slots in the next couple of weeks for the this stage of the SIB Shops program. Ableist is a 501c3 nonprofit supporting more than 700 individuals with special needs and their families from birth throughout their lives in Fairfield County. And if you're interested in SIB Shops or any of their programs, even if you live beyond their jurisdiction area, I'm sure they'd be glad to chat with you. And we do want to remind anyone with siblings in the 9 or 10 to 14 or 15 age range who are brothers and sisters of someone with a disability, they're welcome to join SIB Shops, which is a high-spirited, fun workshop and event offering, combining recreation, discussion, and information for those siblings. So we hope that all works out well, and we get to talk to you again in the fall or early spring and hear more about not just what's going on with the next installment of SIB Shops, but all the other great things going on at Ableist. So thank you. Amy Montemuro is the CEO of Ableist and president. Maddie Schulte is one of the two SIB Shops facilitators, along with, where is it? It is Mary Kate, right? Mary Kate is your partner, Maddie?
Yep, Mary Kate Blum. And she's on our Ableist Youth Board as well.
Excellent. Well, congratulations and best of luck to all of you. And we'll be talking to you folks at Ableist again soon. Folks, once again, for more information, you can go to Ableist, ableist.us. Folks, good luck. Thank you and take care.
Thank you. Yep.
Well, we're pleased to hit the midpoint of the program this morning, talking a little bit more about diversity and meeting someone who is not new to the cause, but new to the position, relatively new, I should say. Julie Lawrence is the Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer at Sacred Heart University. She's the second diversity and inclusion academic leader that we've had on the program in recent months, and happy to have you, Julie. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, John. I'm happy to be here.
So you kind of hinted before we turned on the microphone that, you know, the what is old is new again, so to speak, in terms of this position. Tell me a little bit about your history and coming on to this new titled position.
Sure. Thank you. I worked in finance for many years and moved to New York. I'm from Connecticut, from Fairfield. I'm a Sacred Heart grad. Both of my degrees are from Sacred Heart University. Oh. Sacred Heart is near and dear to my heart. So my finance degree was, thank you, Sacred Heart. And I moved into HR and got a master's. Thank you, Sacred Heart. And since then, have been doing organization development work, some consulting work around diversity and inclusion, coaching, and training. And this role came up a couple of years ago, and I was tapped to come in and really work on implementing organizational and transformational change here at Sacred Heart.
Very good. Well, what is important that folks should also know about this segment is we're not just going to be talking with Julie, but after the break, we're going to bring in the vice president at Sacred Heart University for their advancement, Bill Reedy. And we're going to be talking about and inviting you, especially you baseball fans, to perhaps participate and help fund the Jackie Robinson Foundation scholarship at the university by getting some virtual FaceTime with Major League Baseball legends Joe Torre and Bobby Valentine on October 22nd at the next SHU and 42 Subway Series celebration. So we'll be talking more about that. But certainly the Jackie Robinson Foundation scholarship is one of the many, many tools in your toolbox, Julie. But let's talk a little bit about coming into this position and how you have already or will continue to affect some change and new programming and engagement over there at the university.
Yeah, thank you, John. So, yeah, we're very excited about SHU and 42. I'm a big baseball fan, Yankees, and happy that they're continuing on their
wild card winners
to another ring. but segueing back to diversity and inclusion,
yes.
I'm the inaugural role at this university. Sacred Heart is primarily Catholic white institution, and you know, Catholicism, Fairfield, Connecticut. You have to think about how do you begin to diversify not only the student population, but you make an environment where faculty and staff are welcoming and understanding of the unique experiences and intelligences and work that come from underrepresented and marginalized groups. So that really is my ultimate goal, is really looking at the composition of our existing students, faculty, and staff and understanding how and where we can make some changes. When I started, I thought about, you know, we need to be the change we want to see, and change begins within. So within being Sacred Heart, we have to change who Sacred Heart is in order to attract the students that we want to attract. You may not know, but the largest growing population of students coming into college and university will be from the Latinx population. Highly Catholic demographic, as well as moving along in economic security, as well as ready to send their students to college, a lot of first generation. So when we think about first generation students coming to a university such as Sacred Heart, we have to be sure that we have the supports for our students to feel welcomed and to be successful. And I'll just back up a minute. Our president and our leadership, including myself, put together a 9-point plan of initiatives that we believe will drive Sacred Heart's diversity and inclusion efforts forward. And I won't touch on everything, but we've established a multicultural center that will be a place for students to learn more about multiculturalism, as well as bring issues of concern forward and get support and help to address them. We also have a bias response team this spring and summer with the racial injustice unrest that was happening, as well as COVID. You know, we were all at home and unfortunately forced to view the murder of George Floyd. Yeah. And so we had a social media campaign that really kind of brought the university to a place where we had to figure out what we wanted to do going forward. So we established a bias response team to address incidences, as well as provide reflective responses to incidences to build learning and healing around what's currently going on in the country. We also have some mandatory training that we're delivering. I provide new hire orientation on diversity inclusion to all incoming staff. We also have a faculty-led new hire, which will also be, again, through the inclusive teaching work, building some more inclusivity in the classroom and understanding of race and racial conversations and managing difficult conversations type work.
Well, that sounds like you have your work cut out for you. But then there's also some programming that you've, if not already launched, are poised to or planning on. What is one of the, in your opinion, the most important programs that you want to get off the blocks or have just gotten off the blocks in terms of your work and its relation to both the students and staff?
Yes, I would say the most important thing right now has been the bias response team. At a minimum, it has put the university into a sense that we all must be more aware of what we say and how we say it. I would say also that the Multicultural Center, which literally just opened the last couple of weeks, is another really great accomplishment that was turned around from, as I mentioned, this spring and summer to now. What else? I think that we've also assigned a common read to our freshman incoming class, a book called So You Want to Talk About Race by Ijeoma Oluo. And ideally, we are having the students write a reflection paper about that. And ideally, we can use the Multicultural Center and other avenues to support continuing conversations about race and injustice and unity and inclusiveness going forward.
And to wrap things up for the moment with you, Julie, how about a long game? What's out there on the horizon or a key item on your wish list that you maybe would like to see initiated there at Sacred Heart University in 1 to 5 years from now?
Oh, great question. Thanks, John. I like to talk about this work as it took 400 years to get here. It's not going to be 400 years to get to a new place, but it will take time. So that said, I really look at a lot of the intangible changes that I see and look at that as we're building awareness and desire for change. So in the next 1 to 5 years, I believe that having this SHU and 42 scholarship will be helpful. I also believe that when we begin to think about how we're going to really impact change, putting metrics in place will be very helpful. You know, again, just starting out, I think it would be unfair to hold people accountable for change that they really don't know how to make. So now that we have the knowledge and the desire and awareness building, now we can begin to look at how do we make changes and how do we measure those changes. So when I think about those things, how are we measuring the number of students admitted that are from underrepresented or marginalized groups? That's important, but what's more important to me is, are they graduating? Staff and faculty, if they're coming in, are they supported and able to be successful? So those will be the next 1 to 5 years. Right off the top of my head, those two things are the key for me. The students are our stakeholders. The faculty drive our learning. The staff really run the university. So we really have those three buckets of change that I want to see in the next, 3 to 5 years being really different than they are today.
Very good. Well, it was great to have a quick conversation with you, Julie. And as we said, we'd probably like to come back late winter, early spring, and talk a little bit more about some of these programs and other things that have been developing since the conversation we're going to have today. So really appreciate you taking the time. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to swing back with the university's Vice President for University Advancement, Bill Reedy, and talk a little bit more about this exciting opportunity to help fund the university's Jackie Robinson Foundation Scholarship while taking some time to hang out virtually with Joe Torre and Bobby Valentine. So, Julie, thank you, and we will take a break and be right back with Bill Reedy. Hey there, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Boquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Well, you've been hearing about it on the award-winning For the People for years and years. For anyone with a disability, holding down a job is empowering and instills confidence. Yet 81% of adults with developmental differences don't have a paid job, even though companies that employ people with differences report better morale and higher productivity. There are 6.5 million people in the U.S. with an intellectual or developmental difference, such as autism. But now, thanks to Autism Speaks, Best Buddies, and Special Olympics, there's never been more opportunity to improve hiring practices and build a more inclusive workforce. Join me, our radio station, and these amazing organizations in supporting and creating pathways to 1 million employment and leadership opportunities for this talented community. Learn more by visiting deliveringjobs.org. That's deliveringjobs.org. Well, as promised, Bill Reedy is on the line now with us. He is the Vice President for University Advancement at Sacred Heart University, and we are now going to talk baseball and scholarship. Yes, two things that go well together, especially when we're talking about SHU's Jackie Robinson Foundation Scholarship. The event coming up on October 22nd is called SHU and 42, a Subway Series Celebration, and it's bringing in the one and only Joe Torre and Fairfield County's own baseball. He's not just a star of baseball, he's a diplomat for the sport. Bobby Valentine, a great guy, had numerous opportunities to hang out with him and learn so much from him, and not just about baseball, right, Bill? He's quite a raconteur.
Absolutely.
Isn't he?
Absolutely. Well, describing Bobby as a diplomat of baseball, I think, is absolutely correct, and it is never more clear as he's been leading this effort. It's really thanks to Bobby that this vision came together. So much of what we're trying to do with this event and with this scholarship is respond to the moment that we're in, to make sure that we're doing everything we can to embrace the diversity of our campus, to make it as diverse as possible. And it was Bobby's leadership that really made this happen. He wanted to make this event about scholarship, and he's just brought together a tremendous number of people who have a great affection for him personally to make this work. That's everything from the Robinson family to a whole group of baseball players and celebrities that are helping to get the word out about this event.
Well, so Bill, tell us a little bit more about how people can come to and participate and kind of virtually hang out with these two baseball luminaries.
Absolutely. So you can go to sacredheart.edu/42, and that website will give you all the information about the event itself and how you can participate. We're really excited that the event is not just bringing together Joe Torre, but Harold Reynolds and Bob Costas will be part of the conversation. So we think it's going to be a really interesting and fun night. To look back at 20 years ago, believe it or not, it was the 2000 World Series where the Mets and Yanks faced off. It doesn't feel like 20 years ago, but it has been. So look back at sort of that moment in baseball history. It's going to be a great night.
So as we were kind of talking a little bit with Julie Lawrence in the first segment, the real kind of payoff here is not just for the fans who get to be in on this conversation and this event, but the opportunity to support the university's Jackie Robinson Foundation Scholarship. But let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So believe it or not, Jackie Robinson is a pioneer. I mean, I think we all consider him a pioneer, but he's actually a graduate of Sacred Heart University. We awarded him an honorary degree in May of 1972. That was just about 5 months before we lost him, before he passed away. So we have this great connection to Jackie here at Sacred Heart. And it goes beyond that. Bobby Valentine's father-in-law was Ralph Branca. Ralph was a great pitcher for the Brooklyn Dodgers, and he was on the team that welcomed Jackie to the field when Jackie broke the barrier, the racial barrier in baseball. So Bobby's connection to that moment in history is really palpable. So we're really excited to bring this connection to life in this event. And everything that we raise, or every dollar that's raised, will go to that scholarship, as you said, and it will provide an opportunity for a student coming through the Jackie Robinson Scholars Program to come to Sacred Heart and be a part of our community as well.
So how does the scholarship program help, in your opinion, elevate SHU's position as a progressive, diverse, and inclusive community?
So the Robinson Foundation receives thousands of applications every year for their program, and they only have dozens of scholarship opportunities, but they have way more opportunity to help young men and women, young African-American men and women who are looking for great educational opportunities. So I think what this does for us is it brings Sacred Heart to the attention of a whole group of students coming from all over the country who might not have thought of us otherwise as an opportunity for their college education. So I think it's bringing this great group of really strong academic students to our doorstep. It's helping to make our student body that much more stronger, not just in a diversity perspective, but from an academic strength perspective. So that's what we're really excited about, that we continue to introduce Sacred Heart to more and more of the country and more students who we think are going to make this place fantastic through their presence here on campus.
And I know that you share the opinion of all of the leadership there at Sacred Heart University of the critical importance and the kind of the serendipitous ability to not only attract Julie Lawrence with the talent that she has, but to bring back someone who is an alumni of the school and who has such great familiarity and roots in the Sacred Heart community.
Well, Julie brings so much to us on a daily basis. We are really lucky that she started with us well over a year ago. It gave her a chance to get reintroduced to the university environment. And her leadership has been nothing but fantastic as we've looked for ways to challenge our faculty, to lift up our students as we face this moment.
Yeah. And in terms of the scholarship, do you had the opportunity to meet a number of the recipients of it over the years? And if you
have. We haven't. We're this relationship. And, you know, again, I have to tip my cap to Bobby Valentine. You know, we're only really talking with the Robinson Foundation. They are open to our partnership because they have such faith and they believe so much in Bobby and who he is. So we're getting to know them. We're getting to know the foundation. We certainly know their program, right? The type of student that they've been able to produce. But we've shifted here very quickly. When Bobby agreed to be our honoree well over a year ago, we weren't planning on a scholarship like this. Mm. We were planning to raise some money for some other athletic needs. And it was really Bobby's leadership that said, hey, in this moment, we need to make sure that we're responding in a way that's palpable, that's permanent, and responding in a way that lifts up the entire university. So that's when we started talking with the Robinson Foundation, and we've been able to do this because sure, they look at Sacred Heart and they say, hey, you guys seem to be doing a lot of great things, but their belief and their desire to be a part of our world is because Bobby's a part of our world. So he's been a great leader in this.
Well, baseball fans know Robinson's uniform number was 42, mm-hmm. which is the for the title of this event. The Subway Series Celebration SHU and 42 is coming up on October 22nd. Sacred Heart University is presenting Joe Torre, Bobby Valentine, as well as Harold Reynolds, and you also said
Bob Costas,
right? Great, yeah. four great representatives of the game, and it's all happening to benefit the university's Jackie Robinson Foundation scholarship. So, once again, if you'd like more information or to participate, Bill, they get in touch with you by going to the website.
They can go to sacredheart.edu/42 and find everything you need. We'd love it if you would donate to this event. You can participate at an entry level fee. We're not asking folks to make anything overly sacrificial. We want your participation. We want you to be a part of this, and we want to make sure that this foundation is something that lifts up our entire university.
Fantastic. Bill Reedy is Vice President for University Advancement, and our earlier guest, Julie Lawrence, their Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer, on with us for this midpoint segment. Thank you, Bill, for your time, and best of luck with the event. Well, our final guest this morning is someone who I have just come to know thanks to our ongoing relationship with Maplewood, which is a senior and memory care living community with facilities throughout Fairfield County and Western Connecticut. I'm on the line now with Dr. Wendy Suzuki, and on Thursday, October 8th, next Thursday, she is going to be doing a Zoom talk through Maplewood at Newtown that is entitled The Astonishing Effects of Exercise on the Brain. So that gave my brain a little bit of a jolt. And I said, well, let's call Dr. Suzuki and talk for a few minutes so that she can also pass on some of the great information that she's going to be sharing in this sort of limited Zoom event with folks all over Connecticut and who may be listening on the podcast, wherever they may be. So Dr. Suzuki, really quickly, tell me a little bit about yourself and how you came to know the Maplewood community.
Sure. So I am a professor of neuroscience and psychology at New York University for the past 22 years. But more recently, I became CEO of a new AI machine learning tech startup company called BrainBody. And BrainBody quantifies the astonishing effects of exercise on your brain. So you can take short brain assessments before and after your exercise and figure out and know exactly how much exercise that exercise bout improved your mood, improved your focus, improved your attention. And so we're bringing our brain body technology to this amazing partnership with Maplewood Senior Living to ask. They have a whole bunch of very active, very vigorous seniors out there that do their regular exercise classes. And so we're going to be able to quantify for them and find that sweet spot. What is that exercise class that is giving you the overall best brain boost? So they were really interested in this, and this is how we started up this collaboration.
And folks may also recognize you and your name from the PBS special based on your best-selling book, Healthy Brain, Happy Life, which is all going to be part of this this Maplewood talk. But for our benefit, tell our folks who are listening and me about some of the most important things that they need to know about how exercise in any form is better than no exercise when it comes to benefiting the brain.
Yeah. So here's what I always say, that physical activity is the most transformative thing that you can do for your brain today. And the best news is that you don't have to be a triathlete to get these effects. People, when I say this, people think, oh, well, that's not me. You have to really be, you know, real bodybuilder and body, you know, exerciser. But no, even walking has these transformative effects. So let me tell you my top two transformative effects that everybody should know about. So what happens after any workout that you do, even walking, even a power walk, anybody can do that outside. Power walk around your block, power walk in Costco, power walk whenever you are. What you're doing is you're literally giving your brain a bubble bath of good neurochemicals every time you're moving your body. What are those neurochemicals? Those neurochemicals include serotonin, dopamine, noradrenaline. That gives you that great mood boost, but it also includes growth factors that are helping parts of your brain, particularly your prefrontal cortex, is very sensitive to the beneficial effects of moving your body. But I saved the best for last. I titled my talk, The Astonishing Effects of Exercise on the Brain. What is the most astonishing effect besides that bubble bath that you get every time you work out? The most astonishing effect is that exercise literally stimulates the growth of brand new brain cells in a key brain structure that everybody should be care about in their brain. Mm-hmm. That structure is called the hippocampus, and it's critical for our ability to form and retain long-term memories. It's also first attacked in both aging and neurodegenerative disease states like Alzheimer's. So with exercise, you get the astonishing effect that you are building brand new brain cells in your hippocampus that can, if you're doing it regularly across your lifetime, can help build up this structure. So it staves off both normal aging as well as neurodegenerative disease states like Alzheimer's disease. That's why I call it astonishing.
Well, the other thing I wanted to ask you, Dr. Suzuki, is can you explain a little bit how exercise makes a fundamental difference in how well a lot of the pharma and the prescriptions that people might be taking for not only you know, their memory, but for other things that might be going on, and not just in their brain. There's a you know, you say the even short bursts of exercise give your brain this bubble bath of great minerals and additives. Mm-hmm. Exercise also helps help metabolize and improve the work that the medications that they might be on are doing, right?
Well, I would say one of the best ways that exercise is interacting with possible medications and helping them work, there's two different ways. One of the other astonishing effects of exercise is that with regular exercise, you are stimulating the birth of brand new blood vessels in your brain. So why is that important? The brain is only 2% of your total body weight, but it uses 20% of all the oxygenated blood. So is more blood vessels bringing in more oxygenated blood better for your brain? Absolutely. What do those blood vessels also bring in? Any of the drugs that your doctors have prescribed for you that are working on your brain. So not only is exercise increasing just basic blood flow, oxygenated blood flow to your brain, that will make your brain work better, all parts of your brain work better, but it's also getting those good drugs that you're taking, those helpful drugs, into your brain in a more efficient way. So there's lots of different reasons why exercise is good for your brain and your body.
Do you also find that someone who has been sedentary and who has maybe started to experience some memory issues or other brain function concerns, mm-hmm. do you find that even if they have some history of having these issues, if they introduce exercise into their daily regimen, it could actually restore some functionality?
Yes. And so there are studies that show exactly that. And the bottom line here is it's never too late. Even if you've already been diagnosed with dementia or mild cognitive impairment, exercise has been shown to improve those cognitive states, even if you have dementia or mild cognitive impairment. Why? Because it is, again, creating this healthier, stronger environment for your brain, more good neurotransmitters like dopamine and serotonin, more growth factors that are basically making key brain areas that are susceptible to aging. And those include not only the hippocampus that I talked about, but the prefrontal cortex. So absolutely, it's never too late, and anybody can benefit from this just adding even more walking into the regimen. Again, you don't have to become a super exercise instructor to get these benefits.
The other thing we talked about very briefly before we turned on the microphone this morning is how this, as we hopefully begin to leave the intensity and the impact of COVID behind us coming mm-hmm. into the late winter and early spring next year, how beginning to reacquaint exercise into a larger family dynamic can have benefits multi-generation.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we focused on this wonderful collaboration with Maplewood, which focuses on the older generations. But in fact, every single generation, starting with our youngest school children, can benefit from exercise. Exercise can improve your memory, your focus, your mood. Can you imagine what that can do to the brain that is being prepared to learn something new in school? And so I think you're absolutely right in as we're coming up to the season where more family groups are going to be together at home. This is a wonderful opportunity to come together to move your body together. Sometimes I try not to use the word exercise because sometimes people have a negative connotation with that. Walking is a great activity. Make it a social event. Go walking together with your family. What I've been using to try and maximize my workout time is housework. So housework can be very aerobic and very strenuous. And so you get a sparkly, clean house and your workout in at the same time. The other thing that I've noticed is that in this pandemic where so many people are must stay at home. What has really blossomed into a wonderful new direction is online fitness. It's better, it's more broad, it's more variable, it's for all age groups, it's cheaper than going to the gym, and it's available right there on your computer. So I really recommend looking at free as well as low cost workouts that you can do on your computer alone or with your family members.
Great advice from Dr. Wendy Suzuki. She's an award-winning professor of neuroscience and psychology at NYU, CEO of Brain Body Incorporated. Her book is Healthy Brain, Happy Life, that was made into a PBS special. And if you're a follower of TED Talks, she had the second most popular TED Talk in 2018. If you'd like to know more about engaging and transforming your brain power through exercise, Thursday, October 8th, she's hosting a Zoom session called The Astonishing Effects of Exercise on the Brain with Maplewood of Newtown at 3 p.m. You have to RSVP by October 5th, but if you'd like to get involved and there's room, it's open to you. You need to email reception@maplewoodsl.com. That's reception@maplewoodsl.com. And Dr. Suzuki, it was great to meet you. Thanks for your time this morning. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program for the people. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone.
Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.